Welcome, everyone, to the People Planet Show. This is your host, Marcia McMahon. And stay tuned with us today. We have a phenomenal show and guest with us today. We have Paul Davis, who is the filmmaker of the recent release, Jesus in India. And we're going to be discussing the possibility of Jesus possibly traveling to India during his early years, or we're going to get into even more interesting theories concerning his possible survival of the crucifixion and travel to India after that. So this is going to be a phenomenal show, and I'm so glad that you're listening with us. You were listening to the song Passing Through Botswana, which is written by Bob Murray at thestarstillshine.com. And this music is being inspired from the two greats in spirit, George Harrison and John Lennon. And it's being transmitted through Bob, and it's being created and produced exclusively and only on the Peaceful Planet. So we're very honored to have the Half-Beats, as they now call themselves, producing music for the show. So I want to mention a few announcements before we begin with our wonderful guest, Paul Davis. And I also want to give you a background on Paul before we begin the interview officially. I want to direct our listeners to my website at www.DianaLatePrincess on World Peace, and mention again my book With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, which is on sale through the year to promote world peace. And not only are Diana's messages mentioned in the book, it's a book of her messages about world peace, but it also features the messages of Mother Teresa, John Lennon, and Jesus. So I resonate very strongly with the guest that we're having today because of my work with Jesus in spirit, but as well want to remind you that the book is available. There's also a beautiful watercolor that's recently been created of Mother Mary. So that is posted on the BBS website along with information about our guest. And we're so glad that this is being highlighted on the BBS website today. I don't know if you noticed that, Paul, but your picture is up on the center of our site this morning. So
I did see that. Thank you.
That's great, yes. And I have to say I must be psychic or something because I sent Don a psychic message to get your picture and your bio up, and he did it. How about that? So I'm just laughing a little bit about that. But, no, we're really glad to highlight your work. Now, I'm going to read his bio. I also want to remind our listeners that if you would like to call in, we always traditionally do mini readings at the start of our show. So if you're interested in a mini reading, it has to be just one question so we have time for our guests. You may call in at 877-876-5227 or toll free in Canada at 888-810-8322. You can also call in throughout the show to ask our guests any questions you may have about his new film. Now, I want to direct you to the information we have posted about this show on Station 1. You can click on that at any time and bring up information about Paul Davis at www.pauldavis.com, his personal site. And then the website for the new film that we're going to be discussing today, Jesus in India, and that is at www.jesus-in.
You know what? You don't need the hyphens, actually.
Oh, you don't need that?
It can just be JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com.
Oh, perfect. All right. JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. And now I'm going to read to you Paul's bio here. And remember, listeners, that you can call in anytime and ask Paul any questions as we're conversing, and we invite you to do so. Here is his bio. Paul Davis is a film producer, writer, and director whose career began as the production coordinator and writer of the original Transformers TV show. He then co-wrote 6 Star Wars sequel novels in the early 1990s and then served as co-writer and executive producer of the Showtime original feature Roswell, directed by Jeremy Kagan and starring Martin Sheen, Kyle MacLachlan, and Dwight Yoakam, nominated for a Golden Globe at Best TV Motion Picture of 1994. He followed that controversial film with a number of independently produced controversial features from his company, Yellow Hat Productions, all of which he produced and directed, including Timothy Leary's Dead, Starry Night, The Artist and the Shaman, and Sci-Fi Boys, winner of both a Saturn Award for Best DVD and the Rondo Award for Best Independent Genre Film, and now Jesus in India. He is a graduate of Princeton University and the AFI Center for Advanced Film and Television Studies, and has been a member of Hollywood's Magic Castle for over two decades, as well as being a member of the Writers Guild of America, the Producers Guild of America, and NAILIP. He's also an accomplished painter who has had many shows of his oil paintings. He is married and lives in Los Angeles and Santa Fe, New Mexico. Visit Paul's site at www.pauldavis.com. So welcome, Paul. It's great to have you on our show.
Well, thank you. I'm exhausted hearing that.
Well, you know, you're
have
very...
Have I done all that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, isn't it amazing when you look back on your accomplishments? But you are very accomplished. And I really resonate strongly with your work because I'm also an artist, and I haven't even asked you about the Van Gogh movie, but that sounds fabulous, too.
Be happy to talk about that one. Is Starry Night?
Yeah, Starry Night, of course.
From about the year 2000.
Uh huh.
The trouble with that bio is it makes me feel old. There's just too much there.
Yeah, I know. I got a bio that reads a lot like that too. You know, and you know, the more diverse you are, but see, you are open-minded, very creative, and very diverse, and so you're well accomplished. That's what happens as you get older. You get very accomplished. You know. But you started out, you know, pretty well there with Princeton and the education and all the other things that you were doing. So
I was fortunate being able to go from Princeton, where I was very interested in animation. I think I was the only student there with actually an animation stand in his dorm room and was making cartoons in my spare time. And from there, I went to the American Film Institute Center for Advanced Film Studies, which was then in Beverly Hills. Now it's over in Hollywood. But I was a fellowship student there at the beginning of the school and was actually there with David Lynch, and another of the distinguished alumni of the school. So it took a few years, and then I got established in the film business, first working for an agency in Hollywood, the Paul Koner Agency. Very, very great man, Paul Koner, who represented so many great talents, from Ingmar Bergman to Charles Bronson.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that about him. But, yeah, so you got in and you were able to develop your career, and these films that you're producing now, I mean, Jesus in India is just a phenomenal film.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Marcia. I have great feelings toward it, too, and I hope your listeners will really get into it.
Yeah, now tell me, is it out where they can purchase the DVD, or is it going to hit theaters, or how is this going to...
Yeah, the DVD is available now. At JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com.
Okay.
The film was shown on Sundance Channel three times in...
Mm-hmm, I saw that.
...December, and it is being shown on the Sundance Channel again for Easter. I encourage people to get the DVD for several reasons. One is that it's a pristine widescreen edition, and it has an extra 80 minutes on it of materials that go to the heart of the research that are really going to be of great interest to anyone who wants to further explore what the evidence is about Jesus' lost years and where they can go to collect more.
I was impressed with, because right away, at the opening of the film, you're quoting Elaine Pagels, and I'm a fan of hers from way back.
Yeah, and it was a Princeton professor, of course, so you have a hint as to how I managed to have access to her.
Exactly. I figured that. After I saw your bio, I thought, how did he get Elaine Pagels? And then I read Princeton, I thought, he must have known her or asked her for a favor. But that's great that you got her on there. Although, her early... You know, in favor, I think, of the Gnostic Gospels. And then, because I think she's still on staff there, I think she's a little more guarded, you know. I got the impression she was a little guarded in the movie in terms of what she was willing to say about Jesus being in India.
But there was a key thing that she said that I thought was extremely important. And let me give out just a little background for your listeners. That the focus of this movie, I had to begin by asking, okay, how was I going to approach the investigation into the lost years? And I don't make just ordinary informational documentaries like you might see on some channels. I'm always looking for the story, for the angle that is going to get us really emotionally involved. And I found it in a Texan named Edward T. Martin, who grew up as a fundamentalist in the Church of Christ in Lampasas, Texas. Very small town, very strict practice of religion there. His parents took him to church maybe three times a week, Bible school. He had the whole indoctrination and inculcation, if you will. But he was fascinated with that Bible study. And just as a young man, dismayed that the Bible had nothing about Jesus' life from age 12 to 30, except for one sentence in the Gospel of Luke. That's all. Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. And that one sentence covers 18 years. So he said, what's missing? Why isn't the rest there? Why do we go from Jesus as a 12-year-old boy in the temple in Jerusalem and then suddenly skip his entire life until he's 30 years old, being baptized by John the Baptist at the River Jordan?
Mm-hmm.
It got him into trouble, and it made he was ostracized, and the people in his hometown considered him a kook when he began to accept from his research that Jesus had been in India. Well, the key thing from Elaine Pagels, who is a great scholar, and her book on the Gospel of Thomas called Beyond Belief is a favorite, a real favorite for so many people. Elaine Pagels conceded in the interview that she cannot rule out that Jesus was in India.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she doesn't feel that we can ever know for sure, but that it cannot be ruled out. And that alone, you see, opens the door to a serious investigation of all the theories, you know, some that are legend and myth and some that are based on evidence and fact. And it opens the door for this Texan, Edward T. Martin, who was so beat up in his hometown. I got to tell you, he was not welcome in his church anymore. The people there are so rigid. They said, Ed, stop worrying about where Jesus was for those 18 years. It's none of your business. If it was any of your business, God would have put it in the Bible. Obviously,
yeah. I saw that in the beginning of
the
film.
Yeah, it's not for you to worry about. What should you worry about? Whether you're going to heaven or hell. Worry about your own salvation. Well, it was an absurd answer, but it was the best answer that they could give because they didn't know.
Well, the way you filmed them and the blatant, negative, very self-righteous attitude that it wouldn't have mattered at all, like that one lady said.
Well, what difference would it make?
What a joke these people are. Well, you know, I mean, fundamentalist religion has its problems, and I have had messages from Jesus for years, and therefore I've been excommunicated from a lot of local Christian churches.
I can imagine that would do it. Yes.
Yeah, that would do it. And the thing is, nothing in the message at all contradicts necessarily anything that they would be teaching. It's just the fact that I have the gift and that they don't like, you know.
Well, and what's so wrong with contradicting what they're teaching because the Bible itself contradicts itself?
Exactly.
You know,
and the thing is,
tell me something, Judas. Yeah. You take the story of Judas. How did Judas die? You know, between Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there's two different, completely different versions of Judas's death.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many other contradictions in there. So for those who say it's the inspired word of God, they believe every word of it. Well,
Which word do you believe? Well, it's just like, you know, the contradiction of the resurrection, which some believe, or the various accounts that were disbelieved. And even that is there because supposedly Mary Magdalene saw him at the tomb, but then that was disbelieved by the other disciples. So, and then, of course, the new theory put forward in the film and in other books. Now, I want to mention our listeners are aware of my Holy Grail theories, and this is going to be part of the new CD of the Holy Grail theories, which explores the various theories about Jesus' life, esoteric teachings, and other information that has recently come to light. You may not be familiar with these authors, but I just had them on the show a month ago, Paul, and they have done past life regression and found that they encountered someone who remembered being Joseph of Arimathea, who, you know, was the one that had the tomb that took the
Of course.
And mm-hmm. So the theory goes, and this is according to past life regression with one of the primary authors of the book, the Essenes, Children of the Light. That author was regressed, and supposedly under regression, people cannot lie or make things up. They simply cannot.
Well, I don't know that I would go along with that, Marcia. I may be a little skeptical on some of these points, but anyway, please go on.
Well, the point being is that they uncovered that Joseph was one of the few people in the inner circle of Jesus at the time who was protecting him, who owned the tomb, and who saw to it that there was a secret entrance in the tomb where he could be tended to by healers and therefore revived. And then he saw to his escape up through Damascus and then out to India. So basically it corroborates what you have in the film.
Right. So and that theory is, you know, it in the Ahmadiyya Muslim religion, which is a branch of Islam that is not accepted by the other branches, but they believe that Jesus survived the crucifixion, and
mm-hmm.
and very much what you said. I mean, there have been tombs in Israel found with a back tunnel entrance, with two entrances, and so the fact that Jesus wasn't in the tomb on Easter morning doesn't necessarily, you know, I mean, it's very, as one of the Catholic professors in the film says, it's very difficult to historically investigate the resurrection. You can't. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we don't have the basis for it. But we do know, and I think we can say now, that the gospel that is generally thought to be oldest, Gospel of Mark, the earliest versions of it do not contain the passages about the resurrection. They're not there. The story ends in the earliest versions of Mark when the Marys come on Easter morning, the stone is rolled back, and Jesus is not there. And that's the end. That's
mm-hmm.
the end of the story. Now, everything else that comes either in the other Gospels, Matthew, Luke, and John, or from the later versions of Mark that had this added, everything else that brought in the resurrection, well, the point is it wasn't there in the original version. Jesus was missing, so it certainly invited one to think that he would have been resurrected. And probably there was a lot of oral tradition about the resurrection, because people passed the stories orally for decades, you know, a century or more, before all of this was written down in the four Gospels. But figuring out exactly what happened is
spirit communication.
Were
they just seeing a vision of him? Because, you know, even Paul was supposedly knocked down by a vision, you know.
But there are some that believe that that wasn't what happened, but that Paul actually saw Jesus. That Jesus, alive after the crucifixion, did go to Damascus for a couple of years before returning to India. Why believe this? You know, why take any of this seriously? These are legends in the East, but is there any foundation? Well,
that's
of course, the movie
in the film, and the film is phenomenal.
Yeah, the movie shows what the evidence that the evidence is in both Pakistan and Kashmir. You have very mysterious tombs. In Pakistan, there's a town called Murree, it's known for Murray beer. But the word Murray, which is not an Islamic word, I mean, it comes from Mary, you know, from Mother Mary. And there is a tomb purported to be Mother Mary's tomb in Pakistan.
Yeah.
It's 2,000 years old. It's revered. The thought was that Jesus returned to India with his mother. She died en route. She was buried at Murray, at the town that became named after her, Murray, Pakistan. And he went on to Kashmir and lived out his life. This is the legend, if you will. We're not saying it's a fact, but it's a prominent and entrenched legend in that part of the world. But what foundation does it have? Well, there's the tomb, the Roosevelt tomb, the tomb of the prophet in Kashmir, that many believe is actually Jesus' tomb. It has carvings of the prophet's feet that show the crucifixion wounds. The prophet was reported about on engravings at the Temple of Solomon that they have in Kashmir. Why a Temple of Solomon? Heavy Jewish presence at that time. Lost tribes of Israel. Hebrew words are embedded in the Kashmiri language.
That was what it was explored in the movie, too, the Hebrew connection, and even some bloodline being similar in that area.
Well, the Kashmiri people have a bloodline relationship to Israel has been proven by university studies. So, Jesus in India, the movie.com. That's where I encourage you to go there. There's so much information about the film. There's pictures. There's 6 minutes of the music there. You can hear the beautiful soundtrack.
Yeah, the
Brian
music
Lambert.
Is phenomenally beautiful. Now, this music sounds very exotic and Eastern. Is that how you got it, or how long did it take you to create the film? It must have been a lot of research. And your work with Ed Martin is remarkable because it seems to hold to all of what he has been investigating, apparently, for a lifetime.
Thank you. Well, there's a lot of questions there. I mean, the movie, it begins with Ed's research, which took him. He's been at it for a couple of decades.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book called King of Travelers, Jesus' Lost Years in India. Now, we updated the book, re-edited it, and republished it. You can get that book at the site, too. So it began with Ed's research there. Then the actual making of the movie, about 3 years. It was.
I would imagine.
Yeah,
that
it was
a
several.
It was
months of shooting in India, in the heat of the summer and the monsoons, and then it was travel to Italy, to the Vatican, and to England to speak with a Muslim scholar, Arif Khan, who manages the website tombofjesus.com. And then to many universities, to Princeton, to Georgetown, up to visit a scholar on India, Dr. Paul Fleischman, a psychiatrist and author up in Amherst, and then to the Rorick Museum in New York. Nicholas Rorick, the great artist, is one of those along the way who saw the mysterious scrolls about the missing years of Jesus, said to be in a Buddhist monastery in Ladakh, India. And that's the other part, Marcia, that we haven't begun to talk about yet, that there are documents, there are scrolls.
The scrolls. And I do definitely want to explore the scrolls with you because I think that that is probably one of the most fascinating aspects of your work. And really, that created quite a search and quite a quest. You went almost everywhere, and then you even got the Dalai Lama talking in the movie about the unity of all religions. And then there's various different lamas that you interviewed, but they didn't seem to be able to say too much because apparently when you and Ed got to that one monastery high up in the Himalayas, the documents were ordered sealed for some reason. Is that what happened?
We think that the documents have been under seal for a long time, but let me tell what the documents are and what the search for the evidence was. There's a Russian explorer who back in 1897 Nicholas Notovich is his name.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Ladakh, which is in the Himalayas in northern India, near Tibet. And he fell off his horse, broke his leg, and spent many weeks at the monastery recuperating. While there, he says he was shown ancient manuscripts that filled in the missing years of Jesus and put Jesus in India during that time. But Jesus, as a young man, traveled the Silk Road, essentially repaying the visit of the three wise men who were present at his birth. We three kings of Orient are. Jesus went to the Orient, according to these scrolls, and was in Jagannath, in Puri, the ancient Hindu temple. And many of the locations and what Jesus did are described. Now, when Notovich brought his translation on this to the Western world and wanted to publish it in French and Russian, first, there was a cardinal of the Catholic Church who tried to dissuade him from ever publishing it. And once he published it anyway, he was resoundingly debunked and rejected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People called him a liar. They accused him of making the whole thing up. And there are still Christian groups today. You go on the web to do a search of Nicholas Notovich, and the manuscript is called "The Life of Saint Isa, the Best of the Sons
of
Man." Saint Isa being Jesus,
right,
as he's called by Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims. Well, still today there are websites out there, Christian promoted websites that debunk Notovich and still claim that he was a liar, he made it up, he never even went there, there is no such scroll. And this debunking should stop. It's simply not true what they're saying, because we followed the trail of those who saw the document again in later years. And there are other men of great reputation, starting with Swami Abedananda, who spent 25 years in the West, was based in Calcutta, and curious about the Notovich reports, he arranged to go there to the Hemis Monastery, the Buddhist monastery in the Himalayas, and they showed him the same scrolls. He retranslated them, came out with almost the same translation.
Oh,
we know that this is real. And we went to Calcutta to the monastery where Swami Abedananda lived for so long. We went into his quarters there. The monks took us, they showed us the Victrola that was given to him by Thomas Edison, the inventor of it, this early record player.
That's
a- because Edison was so interested in Hinduism and Vedanta, and they discussed philosophy, and it was...
Well, Edison was fairly enlightened, too. No,
he was.
On words, of course.
So just to wrap this thought together, that not only was it Swami Abedananda, but later the Russian painter Nicholas Roerich, R-O-E-R-I-C-H. There's a museum for him in New York with his thousands of incredible paintings of the Himalayas from his expeditions there. He, too, came across the scrolls, and we show in the film the newspaper articles from 1926 in New York. It was the New York Sun in those days. He sent the reports and the scrolls back to New York, where they were published, confirming the finding of the ancient scrolls that showed that Jesus visited India and had studied with the lamas there. So it's not just Notovich. It's a whole succession of people. There's Madame Caspary in later years and others who can testify that documents exist. They were at the Hemis Monastery, but the Hemis Monastery today will not produce the documents. Why? This is part of our
question. And, it makes me wonder why they won't produce them. The monk himself said it would cause a great deal of controversy, and the first things out of his mouth in the film were, it would cause a great deal of controversy and accuse us of a cover-up. So there you have it. You know?
Well, yeah, he said that was a reason he couldn't act alone to reveal it. He said it would have to be done as a committee decision, that the decision would have to come from down on high. Well, in the world of Buddhism, you can't get much higher than the Dalai Lama.
I was going to say, the Dalai Lama would be the ultimate authority.
We took the case to the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama, all he'll confirm is that he's heard of all these stories about Jesus in India, but he won't admit to knowing anything or to having seen the documents. And he is in a very awkward and difficult political position with respect to this, you see, because it's no secret that there are major Christian groups who do not want this information to come to light.
Exactly. And that,
and he's under that pressure. He can't just go against the West.
He's on good terms with the Vatican, and the Vatican tends to support his cause for a free Tibet and support throughout the media, et cetera. He's on good
terms. Well, certainly
the
United States and the Congress that gave him the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
This is not to say he withheld information. I can't say that. I don't know that. But I do know that in our film, we obtained an interview with the Shankaracharya of Hinduism in Jagannathpuri.
Right. Yeah, and that was very interesting because he had it all in the records. He corroborated your
story. Corroborated that Jesus was there at Jagannath, just as had been claimed in the scroll. People ask, what is a Shankaracharya? Well, there are four of them in the Hindu religion, north, east, south, and west, and I've been criticized for referring to that post as being like the Pope of Hinduism. Maybe not really like Pope, maybe more like Archbishop, but an ultimate authority among the Hindus. And it's a title that goes back to before the time of Jesus, according to the Shankaracharya himself, who claims it goes back about 2,500 years. And he says, yes, Jesus was there, he was at the Jagannath Temple, as was reported in the Notovitch scroll, and was also, you're very interested in channeling, it was all channeled by Levi Dowling in the very famous book, The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ.
Correct. That's why I knew I had heard of this somewhere, and I was thinking, no, I've read things that were channeled that talk about his long journey across the desert and how he cut his feet on the way, and his travels to India, basically. That's where I read that, exactly. The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And although he was a contemporary of Notovitch, I don't have any indication that one knew of the other.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The other one to mention here is Hazrat Mirza Ghulam, Ahmad Ghulam, the founder of the Ahmadis, the Ahmadi Islam branch of the Muslims.
Is that the same sect that that Khan man? No, I don't mean Khan.
Yes.
Arif Khan,
in London is an Ahmadi.
Now,
they were a persecuted group, by the way, and persecuted for their beliefs. And one of the beliefs they're persecuted for among Islam is their belief that Jesus survived after being crucified and is buried in Kashmir.
Now, I think I've got to talk to him too because the story just keeps getting wider and wider. Did you find as you were filming that you were discovering more and more information?
We were, certainly, the scholars that we spoke to provided us leads. Arif Khan provided us with additional information.
He's brilliant. I really liked his take on things.
He certainly pointed us to the fact that there is a Hindu document that goes back to the first century that places Jesus in Kashmir, having met King Shalivahan then, and the claim that he became a spiritual advisor to King Shalivahan. And the Muslim religion refers to Jesus as the Prince of Travelers. It's commonly believed in the Orient that Jesus traveled very, very widely. And it's reasonable, because had he just remained in Judea, The Bible takes him up to age 12. Well, at age 13, he would have been bar mitzvahed in the Jewish religion, and that's the ceremony where a Jewish boy becomes a man, and then you are married. Marriages were arranged.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been married.
Yep.
We don't have a reason why he wouldn't, and men were married at a young age then, as I say, unless he departed, unless he took that Silk Road with the merchants and went to the East. I think it's so reasonable, and so much of the evidence points there. And one of the quotes that I love to call attention to is that it says in the Bible that Jesus says, that a prophet is not without honor except in his own land, in his own town, among his own people.
Exactly.
So how does he know that the prophet is honored elsewhere if he hasn't been elsewhere, you see?
Yes. Now, you know, I was planning to read a part of a conversation I had with Jesus that I just found right before the interview where he talks about this very thing, and I'd like to interject a paragraph that is a quote from my book, which is a channeled message from Jesus from some years ago, talking about the same thing. That's very interesting that you brought this up. So if you'll allow me a minute or so to read this, I think we'll get a very keen insight on what...
Now, what you're saying is that this is something that you feel that you have channeled from Jesus himself? Is this what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And he's talking about this. Yeah, this is published in my book. And he says, and the wise are confounded, and the meek inherit the kingdom of God. It has always been this way. My prophets, they kill and they cast out. Then the people hear the prophets, and they rise up, and they worship them, and proclaim my prophets God. And so goes the cycle, the teacher, the gurus, and the worshipers. Earth has had many great teachers. Be watchful, then, in the days ahead for sandstorms in the desert. There are many grains moving in the wind, and these are hard times. But then the desert will bloom, and your flower, England's rose, will bloom again upon the earth. Many will hear you then, my child. Peace be with you. Peace I leave you, Jesus. So basically, he's talking about the progression and the tradition of prophets, gurus, and how people follow the prophet, and then somebody decides to kill the prophet, and then the people proclaim the prophet God, which is what he was talking about his own life, I think, here in this little excerpt that I have, and this isn't the whole message, but he was giving me a message about my work with Princess Diana and talking about prophecy in general and how it's so sorely misunderstood. And yes, the prophet is never welcome in their hometown, and that definitely, that was a perfect opportunity to insert that idea here and share a little bit about that work I've done with him. But I haven't asked him about any of this with India. That's for this discussion. But it resonates very strongly with me, and, mm-hmm. and I thought it was a very interesting message. So anyway, we can get back to talking about wherever you were with, you know, Jesus' feelings about being a prophet. But I totally agree that he was obviously, you know, misunderstood in his own culture and his own time. And it seems as though what you covered in the film, too, Paul, was that it seems as though everywhere he went, his message upset some religious leader at some level. And
well,
that,
and Marcia, if I could interrupt,
yes.
This, the fact that that's true is indirectly an interesting corroboration of the fact that these documents we're talking about are true, are accurate. And why do I say that? Well, the Notovitch document that fills in the missing years in India paints a picture of not a complacent Jesus, not a Jesus who is merely learning from Hindus and Buddhists, although he may have studied with them to understand what they believed, but it shows a Jesus who protested against Hindu worship of idols, the Hindu caste system, which, you know, there are four castes, with the Brahmins
right,
being
yeah.
the upper caste.
And all of that sounds just like him.
It sounds just
about.
Like Jesus, that the lower caste, they have rules against reading the Vedas to the lower caste, and yet Jesus broke that proscription, according to the scrolls, and did do that. and aroused their wrath with his objections to some of these things about Hinduism to the point where they were ready to assassinate him when he escaped. Now, I'd ask you to consider, if, as some people have claimed and charged, that these stories about Jesus in India were simply made up by Hindus who, of course, would want to have a closer association with Jesus in their own religion and feel that they would benefit from it. If that were true, they wouldn't have told the stories where Jesus had objections to their religion, would they? Certainly
no.
Wouldn't.
No, and see, what this leads me to, and I've read this in other material, Dr. Joshua Stone's work in particular, his claim, and he's also a great channel, is that Jesus was not just a teacher to the Jews or the Essenes or the Messiah to that group of people,
mm-hmm.
but that Jesus was rather a world teacher who was trying to show the unity of world religions, and he was way ahead of the game. And then if you look, and what's beautiful about your film, Paul, and what's so miraculous about it, is that you pick up on all these wonderful religious traditions, and there's unity throughout the film, and even the Dalai Lama talks about kindness, love, compassion, and mercy, that all great teachers embody that. But throughout the film, you get this wonderful diversity, but there's this theme of, teacher, guru, prophet, Jesus going to all these different places, giving the same message.
Marcia, I'm going to give you a detail that isn't mentioned in the film, but
mm-hmm.
I understand that there's 108 beads in the rosary, in the Catholic
okay.
rosary,
mm-hmm.
And there's also 108 in the Buddhist prayer beads. And when I was in Jagannath Puri at the Rath Yatra festival, which happens once a year, it's the festival of the chariot, they were bathing the images of the deities in holy milk, purified milk that they had prayed over, and I took a step back when I heard that there were 108 pitchers of milk that they used. So why do you get these common threads, you know, in all the religions,
yeah.
unless they have origins that go, you know, that connect through their founders. So.
Yeah, and these holy messengers of God, today you look at our world, especially the Middle East, and this reflects some of my work with Princess Diana, too, where she talks about the need for all religions to really come together. And this, you know, terrorism in the name of God, et cetera, is just... It's so far removed.
We encountered that terrorism in making our movie.
And you went around it, even
apart from seeing the movie, you can read about it at JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com.
Yeah.
Because the
I
story.
That was very...
Oh, and speaking of the story of, uh-huh. of how we made the movie,
yeah.
I need to mention that Edward T. Martin, a Texan,
uh-huh.
he wrote a second book. I love his second book. It's called Jesus in India, King of Wisdom, The Making of the Film, and New Findings on Jesus' Lost Years.
I'd love to have Ed on the show, and I'm planning to. He seems like a very sincere...
I know he'd love to do that.
Researcher.
He'd love to.
And he seems like such a broad-minded, yet normal kind of guy that did a lot of his world travel when he was with the Peace Corps, and found his true calling in this work.
Well, he's also a mountain climber, and it's just astonishing to hear him rattle off about the 11 mountains that he's, you know, scaled in his lifetime.
What a great guy, huh?
He's terrific. We got along very well, and I find his story really interesting. Well, what I wanted to say about his second book,
uh-huh.
Jesus
well,
and
we'll
the King of Wisdom, coincidentally also available at the website. You know, we published
it. Well, yeah, of course. You
got to
plug it.
It tracks the extraordinary adventure we had to go through in India and elsewhere to make the movie. It was not easy to get these religious leaders and experts involved in talking before the camera, and we faced not only the monsoons and the washed out roads and the incredible heat,
uh-huh.
but the terrorism.
Exactly.
Because we wanted to go to Kashmir, to Srinagar in Kashmir, where the Rosabal tomb is, to film there. Now, today, I would tell all your listeners, don't plan on going there. You cannot go there as a tourist. You will not come back alive. Do not even think about it. At, when we were there, there
were
State Department warnings about it.
Had 911 occurred or just occurred? Or,
No. 911 had occurred because this was 2005 when we went there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And that tomb is in a Muslim district that is so hostile to Westerners and to Hindus. You know, there's a war going on essentially
in Kashmir.
In Kashmir. I mean, it's not a constant battle, but there's acts of terrorism all the time.
Yeah.
And people being killed, and there were people killed just after we were there, like a day or two after we left, there were 13 people killed right near where we were, and the houseboats that we stayed in on Dal Lake, which should be so peaceful, it's so beautiful there, it's idyllic.
That's very charming.
A year later, they bombed the houseboats.
Oh, my God.
So you don't want to pay a little visit to what may be the tomb of Jesus, the Prince of Peace, because there is no peace there.
Isn't that a shame?
But we got it on film, and you'll want to see it in Jesus,
you know, Paul,
in India.
Philosophically, isn't it a shame that if that were the tomb of Jesus, and it most likely is, I believe your research to be genuine, and I have no reason to doubt that perhaps that is. I'm saying perhaps, but still, you know, the point is that if all, indeed, all religions were intended to be as one, then you know, we have a long way to go as a world to get to that. Because I saw the hostility that was going on in the film there when you guys were trying to just film the tomb. And then the woman that was talking about the tomb of Mary being close by. And
that's Suzanne Olson, who's written a book about that tomb. Yeah.
Yeah. And she seems wonderful, too. And then she apparently had to leave due to the 911 situation and the hostilities and the terrorism becoming rampant in the area. But the blatant disrespect that they were showing you as you were trying to film, and the narrow-mindedness was very reminiscent of the beginning of the film with the narrow-mindedness of the fundamentalists in Ed's church. So
it's interesting to
you go.
It's interesting to reflect upon that we have fundamentalist Christianity in the West, and we have fundamentalist Islam in the East, in the Muslim world. And what characteristics do they show in common? You know, they're certainly, these people are very hard to persuade of anything. When you have people that are so fixed in their point of view and so committed to their way of life being the only way, I mean, certainly the Christians will tell you that Jesus is the only way, you know,
well,
accept them or be damned. And
the whole problem, then, with the world, and what we're trying to promote on the Peaceful Planet is unity consciousness and tolerance and acceptance for people not like you. And
mm-hmm.
I think our listeners tune into that, you know. But if you're a person coming from love, then you can't, you know, not have an open mind. You can't close your mind down to other cultures and other traditions, you know.
You know, I mean, in fairness, and I've tried to be fair to everyone in the film, I want to say that the film is not against anyone. It gives leaders and scholars of all the different religions a chance to have their say, whether Catholic, Buddhist, Muslim. There's a Jewish rabbi from Loyola University who speaks in it as well. We have five prominent Catholics in the film, including Monsignor Corrado Balducci, who's Apostolic Nuncio to John Paul II. We have two Catholic scholar professors at Georgetown University. We have the bishop, the Catholic bishop of Bareilly in India. And we have Michael Hesseman, who's a Vatican-accredited journalist and a devout Catholic. And they all get the chance to express the Catholic view on these questions.
Yeah, I got that.
And part of the feeling that is expressed is that they don't so much object to the idea that Jesus may have been in India, although Corrado Balducci absolutely doesn't believe it, because he thinks you can't go beyond Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in trying to understand Jesus's life. However, the others feel he may have gone there. The Gospel of John says that you couldn't contain all the books in the world, all the things that happened in Jesus' life. So they say, well, we can't say that he wouldn't have gone there, and who were we to tell the Lord that he shouldn't have done so? That would be ridiculous. But they want evidence. They want to say, we don't want to believe that unless we really are convinced of it. And, you know, maybe they haven't looked at the evidence as much as we have. Of course, we would like to have, we're not saying we have the answer, because we don't have the document to test it scientifically. We wish we did.
Here's the other thing, Paul, though. Bear in mind that there's been, since the 1940s, the existence of all the Gnostic Gospels, which all corroborate one another and are earlier than most of the earliest sources.
Well, they don't necessarily all corroborate one another. You know,
well, but the point being, though, that they basically do, because they are from the Gnostic tradition, which is the intuitive tradition that coexisted alongside the outer church tradition, which was the Peter tradition, which was to follow the rules of the road, so to speak, and then there was the inner tradition, which was the Gnostic tradition.
Yeah, we do have the Gnostic Gospels, and it was
and
back in 1948, they were discovered in Nag Hammadi, Egypt.
Exactly, but here's the thing. There's so much evidence in there that paint a different picture of Jesus, and the church has, it doesn't even, you know, in my opinion, it doesn't even matter what exists in terms of corroborating anything, because they'll look away from the evidence that's so strong, even in the Gnostic Gospels, that paint a slightly different version of Jesus. You know,
they consider them heretical. And
Mary,
the reason that they had to be found under the sands in the desert in these giant urns is because if they hadn't been buried, they would have been destroyed back then.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
No one would read them. Mm-hmm.
Right, so the church has for a long time decided what is true and edited out whatever they didn't agree with for whatever patriarchal, monetary, whatever. I mean, they edited out reincarnation out of the Bible, too, in the Nicene Council of about 330 A.D.
You know, Elaine Pagels would not necessarily disagree with that. She's the expert on the Gnostic Gospels, and she talks about how in the Gospel of Thomas, that one of the sayings of Jesus is, blessed is he who comes into being before he comes into being. And what does that mean if not reincarnation and multiple life and being reborn again and again?
You know, Paul, this is absolutely fascinating, and we could go on and on forever, and I want to thank you for being a guest on our program, and I want to mention your website and invite our listeners to visit the website and purchase the DVD. It's one of the most brilliant I've seen in years, titled Jesus in India, and you can read about it and purchase it at www.jesusinindiathemovie.com. And we're going to close out already. We're at time, Paul.
Sure.
We're going to close out with The Peaceful Planet, and that's our theme song. And you can listen in for a few minutes if you'd like as we close out the show. And hopefully we can have you on again to discuss this in more detail. Because
thank you, and I hope Ed Martin will join you, too. I think he will.
I think Ed's going to come on, and I think he seems to be a very fine scholar. So thank you for all your hard work and for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you on air, and we hope that you'll join us again sometime.
It's been a delight. Thank you, Marcia.
Same here.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.